Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
My guests today are Stacey Murray and Zach Reynolds. They joined Tyler and I to discuss the potential changes to capital gains taxation as well as corporate and estate taxes. I know you'll enjoy our conversation. Hope it serves you along your journey. Stacey and Zach, thanks for coming by to discuss one of the always present but not terribly fun issues of taxes. So specifically, there's a lot kind of up in the air about tax changes across a variety of spectrums. So I'm just going to kind of open it up with what changes are you expecting out of the administration in this calendar year?
I mean, it's hard to say what's going to happen, right? But I think there's been a lot of discussion. And I think the number one discussion item that's getting kind of all of the attention is capital gains. And that's on everybody's kind of front of their minds and trying to figure it out. With capital gains, the way it works or has worked in the past, they've been taxed at a more favorable treatment and not at like an ordinary tax bracket. So what I mean on that, depending on where you fall in your brackets, it's either a 0% tax or a 15% tax or a 20%. So really where it's going to come into impact, I think, is they're trying to go after those.
Long-term capital gains.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Good call. And so I think that they're going in and they're looking at trying to go after those that make over $1 million or higher. So it's those that are going to be recording on their, you know, 1040s, right? Their W-2 earned income having over $1 million. And they're going to try to increase that. I think that's what they're trying to do by the end of the year. What the problem is, we don't know where they're going to land, right? What rate are they going to take it up to? Are they going to take it up to the ordinary? And they've talked about increasing the ordinary tax brackets to be even higher, back up to having a 39.6% bracket. So I think there's a lot of what ifs on what will get passed. But I do think that that's probably the top one that they're really concerned about is capital gains and what that would do. And Zach, I mean, you have a perspective on what that would do to the market.
Sure. Yeah. And I think another point of concern, certainly that I've heard from clients, is if a capital gains increase is passed, when will it be effective? One thing that surprised a lot of people was when Biden rolled out his plan, he said, I consider if we pass this, the capital gains effective when I announced the plan, which was back in the spring. It would be very unusual, maybe unprecedented, to have a retroactive capital gains.
Why do you say it would be unusual or unprecedented?
It just hasn't happened historically. So there have been instances, Stacey, correct me if I'm wrong, but where a tax decrease was made retroactive. So that works in favor of the taxpayer. No one is upset that they're paying less in taxes. The idea that before Congress has even acted, actions that we're taking today in client portfolios could be hit with a higher tax rate than is currently the law strikes a lot of people, including me, as wrong. So it would be a surprise to me if Congress were to make the capital gains tax increase retroactive. I think what a lot of people expect, as Stacey was saying, is perhaps we get a higher capital gains rate, most likely for people above a certain income level, but effective January 1st of 2022, which, you know, we should know in the coming months if this is going to happen, allowing us a little bit of time to work with our clients, tax professionals, to prepare clients and their portfolios and make some end of year decisions around if we want to recognize gains this year or not.
And I think, Zach, you're correct on that. A lot of us point to evidence-based, right? In the last 25 years, there's not been any tax legislation passed that has gone back to January 1st of the beginning of the year that would have had a tax increase. And this is what we're talking about, tax increases for individuals.
So you mentioned the potential for the capital gains to increase. How confident are you? Kind of bracket that for me in either certainty percentages. How confident are you that capital gains are going to increase and this legislation is going to get passed?
I think they're using it as a bargaining chip. I think that's one of the, you know, hot topics that's been really discussed. The other hot topic that's been discussed is looking at eliminating the step-up basis.
Say more on that.
So the step-up basis when a person dies upon inheritance, right? And so right now there's a threshold set. The individual one's like 11.7 million is kind of your threshold that you can do for an estate gift tax exemption. So we're talking about those ultra high net worth individuals that have a lot of money to leave to their heirs and what will be the tax treatment on that. And so what they're looking to do is saying, hey, we're going to get rid of step up. So right now, anything below that $11.7 million per an individual, you double it for a couple. So $11.7 million for an individual, you don't have to worry about, okay, my mom and dad, right, had that asset at $100,000 on the books.
They bought Coke back in 1957 or whatever it is.
There you go. Yep. And so today's value, when they've passed away now and they're going to leave it as an inheritance to me, that Coca-Cola stock, I'm not going to have to go in and pay taxes on that step up because we know there's been market appreciation. They're looking at eliminating that or, again, setting some type of threshold on that. There's been a lot of talk, though, of what does it do to the family farms, the small businesses, family-owned businesses on those? Is that taxing an unrealized gain event? So I think they're kind of using that as a bargaining chip of, okay, we may, you know, as Democrats are in there, we may let that one slide, but we're going to really push the capital gains one because a lot are both going after the ultra high net worth.
Yeah, it's a significant tax benefit, and not just to the ultra wealthy. I mean, a lot of people inherit an account that may be $50,000 or $100,000, but particularly if it was from a grandparent or a parent who bought stock a long time ago, they're likely to have significant gains. And the difference between getting that full step up and being able to sell the day after the person dies and pay no tax, or if we lose the step up, paying capital gains rates, which could push an inheritor into a higher tax bracket, it could be a very significant tax increase for a lot of people.
I think one thing that we get a lot of questions about is, on this step up, is it only marketable securities? Where else does it apply? So maybe an example of what else that can impact besides just somebody that owned Pepsi for forever.
I mean, I think of Yellowstone, right? That hopefully everybody's watching or waiting for season 4 to come out. I know I am. But you think of Yellowstone, right? These family farms. My mom inherited a family farm from Nebraska and having to pay, you know, a step up on that. And it's been in the family forever, right? On that amount. It's family farms, it's businesses, I think, are the other things to think through. Family businesses that we go in and get those kind of valued at the time of death and try to, and that's another whole thing, evaluating them. And that's expensive to do.
Yep.
Yeah. I just think it's important to highlight that this affects so much other than just marketable securities. So go ahead, Dan.
Well, like you're saying, it affects so much else. We haven't talked about corporate tax rates. What's your outlook there for changes as part of this overarching Biden tax plan for corporate tax rates?
I think we're getting a little more clarity on the corporate tax rate. I think it is likely to go up. It was reduced significantly, though. We're down to 21% for U.S. corporate tax rates.
And where does that rank historically?
So we were one of the highest in the world in terms of corporate tax rates. We're more now kind of toward the middle. I still think we're above average on corporate tax rates. Now, of course, if you read much about it, many of the multinational companies have figured out ways to reduce their effective tax rate. So there's certainly years where big profitable companies don't pay any tax at all due to structuring through places like Ireland. So, you know, that's just the headline rate. It isn't necessarily the effective rate that companies pay. But one thing that Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, has come out and said is he's not willing to go above 25%. If we were to go from 21 to 25%, you're going to see somewhat of an impact on the S&P 500. Dexter, you know this. We watched a webinar from Goldman Sachs recently. If you take analysts' estimates on face value for 2022, it's not going to have that much of an impact if that ends up being the ultimate tax increase. And looking back historically, there's a small impact to the market, but generally speaking, the market takes small tax increases like that relatively in stride.
The one that I remember them saying was in the run-up to the announcement, it's kind of flat and they're trying to figure it out. But the market, once they get the actual legislation, like you said earlier, with multinational corporations, very smart accountants, figure out how to take advantage of it, or maybe take advantage is the wrong word, but the noise is bad. Once they have certainty, they're able to react.
Yeah, one thing I don't worry about is Stacy's old colleagues in the accounting world losing their jobs. I think anytime there's changes to the tax code, it's more accountants get made, not fewer.
That's fair. Yep. And I think, too, they had talked, you know, as having it as high as 28%. So they kind of already had that market shock of, oh, my gosh, if they take it up to 28%. Right. And now they've tabled it back down to 25, right, trying to kind of bring it. So we had talked about going from 21% to 28, and now we're kind of in the middle at 25.
That's a really good point. And another client comment or question I'm getting a lot right now is, hey, I see markets are at all-time highs. We've made 50-plus all-time highs this year. You know, is it a good time to put money in? Is it not a good time? And we're not short-term market timers, so we're never going to say, yeah, it's a great time or it's a terrible time. The truth is, we don't know what the market's going to do tomorrow. We just know if we're disciplined and stay invested over a long period of time, we're going to do well. I think what the market has been telling us, though, is that it's looking at the tax proposals. It's probably pricing in a relatively better outcome than it looked like earlier in the year.
So with all of this, and again, painting in kind of some uncertainty, how are you advising clients, either as individuals and or businesses, to utilize the remaining 2021 calendar year here?
I think one of the things we're first sitting down with our clients, of course, is saying if you haven't taken advantage of the higher estate tax threshold, do that. What we do know, right? So let's focus on what we do know. We know that's going to sunset December 31st.
For the sake of clarity, you are not encouraging clients to die in this calendar year, right?
No, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, just want to make sure. All right.
No, we've survived enough this year. Let's not have any other deaths. But the one thing is the inheritance exemption limit that is set right now at $11.7 million that's slowly accreting up. We know that that'll sunset back down. So it's set to expire December 31st of 2025. That's going to come back to pre-levels of 5.5 million, 6 million.
Unless Congress acts.
Unless Congress acts.
A lot of people would say that that's likely to happen, depending on who's in control. But you're right that legislatively, that's the law today.
It will go
back unless Congress acts.
So let's use what we can today, right, and take advantage of what's out there. And so we're really encouraging our clients to make sure that they've set up their estate plans and that they're meeting with their estate attorneys and their CPAs to do as much as we can do today, knowing that things can change tomorrow, right? And that's kind of where we're at. I think we're also meeting with a lot of our clients and small business owners and walking them through the analysis and running projections if things did change. We've had some clients, they're in a lower tax bracket, and we've said, let's go ahead and realize some capital gains and get it off the table. So we're not having to do that in the next few years. So if there's a gap year where you're not having huge amount of income, and maybe it's the year, maybe you've retired and it's before you're going to get into your required minimum distributions and pulling in your Social Security, those are probably a perfect year to go in and take advantage of the capital gains that we currently know for long-term capital gains treatment is usually 15% for the average.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think if we had clarity going into the end of the year, and let's say not a base case scenario, but a scenario where step up gets eliminated and capital gains rates are going to go up January 1st, there's a huge incentive for clients or anyone else to recognize capital gains in the year 2021. And if you think about clients who've held stock for a very long period of time with a very low basis, those people in particular have a significant incentive to realize some capital gains. So I think it's going to be a significant crunch toward the end of the year for CPAs and estate planning attorneys and others to work with their clients. So it's certainly not too early in the sense to start thinking about it. It's too early in the sense that we just don't know from Congress yet what the actual law is going to be.
What, and I know you hate speculating, what would be your prediction, Zach, for the last month of the market behavior then in the event that we get clarity? Do you see a sell-off in the event of everybody rushing to get in? Just kind of, again, I know you've kind of thought about it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
There are people out there who are already predicting that, right? That we'll see a big sell-off in December based on people selling because capital gains are going to go up. Could it happen? Sure. From my perspective, as we manage over $1.5 billion, if we do recognize some gains, and in some cases, I think that will be the appropriate course of action, but we've still got to put that money somewhere. And Dexter and I have this conversation all the time. Do we want to go put it in cash and earn nothing? In fact, lose 4 or 5% relative to inflation? No, that's a bad place to put your money, generally speaking. Do we want to put it in bonds and earn 1%, 1.5%? Still probably losing money to inflation? No, that's a tough spot to put it. So ultimately, I think people will look at that, make the same calculation we're making. They're very likely to keep most of that money invested in the stock market, which is going to likely, I think, offset some of the selling pressure because you're going to have someone taking that money and buying on the other side.
Last question I got here. So when you think about tax planning, what time periods do you kind of break this up into? Is it calendar years? Is it a lifetime? Is it specific earning years? Just kind of in general, as you think about tax planning, how do you approach it with a timeline perspective? Does that make sense, Stacey?
It does. I think it differs for every person, but I think in where you're at in your stage of life, versus a 20-year-old versus, a 70 or 80 year old or a 40 year old that's in their high earners.
Yeah. Years. And obviously income makes a huge difference there.
Right.
It does. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge amount of difference. And it's also different for W-2 employees versus business owners. There's a lot more flexibility with business owners and what they have to do. A lot of people wait and try to do it after year end, right? And they're putting everything together. They're trying to meet with their CPA. Year's done. It's March 15th, March 20th. Taxes are due April 15th. And they're trying to figure out how they can save money. And at that point, all you can really do is put $6,000 in a Roth. I mean, it, really, that's where you're at. So I think tax planning, and that's one of the things that we really try to do at Full Sail Capital, is it's an ongoing, reoccurring basis. We're very careful too, though, that we don't want the tax decision to drive our investment decision. Because a lot of the time people try to let the tax decisions make the overall investment decision, and that's not usually the best case scenario. So we really work with the CPAs throughout the year. I'm actually reaching out to my clients right now that haven't done RMDs. Instead of waiting till the end of the year, reaching out now, talking through that, seeing what we want to do with it. But it's definitely an ongoing, reoccurring. I hate that taxes only get brought up when they're due, because I think that's a loss opportunity to be able to try to save.
I see you nodding along there, Zach.
Yeah, the other thing I'd say, I agree with Stacey for sure. What I see a lot of times is, it may not necessarily be a calendar year thing, but it might be more based around life events. We often work with clients who are approaching retirement. They come and they want to work with an advisor and think about, okay, I've got these different buckets of assets. How do I plan my retirement from here? There are often opportunities, if you're going from being a high earner to being retired, to wait until that time to recognize some gains, because you might drop from the 20% tax capital gains tax bracket down to the 15% or even zero in some cases for people who had been, you know, in the top tax bracket. So there are often opportunities around there. I think that's why it can pay to work with an advisor. We also discover a lot of those opportunities through the financial planning process, which anyone with assets out there who is struggling to make these decisions, I think that is a very worthwhile exercise to go through, particularly as you approach big life events like retirement.
And I think one to add that you triggered for me was business transactions too. If you're a business owner, have you thought through your business transactions? I was actually talking to an estate attorney. We did like a lunch and learn with another estate attorney office a couple weeks ago. And they were saying, we love when they come in and they say, hey, we're closing in 5 days. What can you do to save us taxes? Where if you would have been working with us the whole time, you know, had we had moved some units, you know, and moved them to the children or things like that to have you have a different basis. And just there's a lot of tax strategy that can happen, but it can't happen in the ninth inning.
Anything that we missed or that you want to kind of touch on regarding the projection for tax changes upcoming here?
Some people do their own taxes. I used to do my own taxes. I have certainly found value in having a CPA. And as someone who works with a lot of high net worth folks, I see the value that a really good tax advisor can add. So if you don't have one and you think you might need one, go talk to someone or ask us, and we're happy to give some recommendations.
Stacey, anything else?
No, I think we've covered it. I think it'll be interesting to see where we land the next couple of months. And I think the end of 2021 will be busy for all of us.
Until next time, fair winds and following seas.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.